This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
To this half hour brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Keywords 11 and 15, Elmhurst Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. And T. Frank, we welcome you back. Great to have you with us on the show, as always.
Steve, good to be with you.
All right, so we've talked, you break down quarterbacks so well. And I had said in the offseason to groups when I go out to speak to them that Drew Aller was 59.5% last year. If he could get himself to 63 to 65 this year, he'd have a great year. Well, he's 72 plus right now. Why?
Well, that's a great question. The first thing is I think that the offense is presenting him with better opportunities, and he's not having to throw in, hey, Drew, fix this for us sort of situations where run on first down, run on second down, now it's third and five, and it's a more difficult pass. That's just the nuts and bolts of a generalized, probably too grossly generalized statement about his situation last year versus what this offense has done this year. And then you throw into the account that Tyler Warren is an incredibly reliable receiver. So when he's throwing those passes, you know, I apologize. I should have his adjusted completion percentage up, which, you know, eliminates drops and things like that and throwaways. Yeah. That's a big part of it. And there are less dead plays in the offense. So he was top five last year in throwaways in terms of the best decision he could make was to kill the play and throw the ball out of the end zone or at the feet of his receiver. There's significantly fewer of those. And I guess the last layer would be he's extending plays much better this year, and James Franklin has given him his praise for being able to do that and to, you know, throw on the run and avoid pressure so that it's not those situations don't present themselves as much. So there, as always with quarterbacks, there's multiple layers to this, but I think generally he's improved and the situation is improved. And the way the offense operates this year gives him better opportunities, which he's then doing more with and able to fix some of those situations around him, you know, unlike last year where there was, you know, some sticking points within the offense.
Another element I want to bring up, you said there are fewer dead plays. How much has it helped them that you have two running backs that have become proficient at catching the ball and maybe taking what could be a dead play and at least getting something out of it?
Yeah, I think this is another area where he's gotten better is those check downs and just being more accurate on them. I know that watching him in the spring game, even obviously very windy in the spring game, but it was kind of a common theme last year where he would either overthrow one of those check downs or he would throw it a little bit off target, and they haven't gotten as much out of that. With Nick Singleton in particular, his transition as a receiver, not only to catch the ball cleanly and confidently and efficiently, and Steve, you've watched this development over time of Nick when he got to Penn State and Nick when he is now, the ability to address the ball in the air, just in the observations I've had, is night and day. And then what he's able to do with it then, once he has the confidence, catch the ball cleanly, and then make plays as a natural athlete in space, that's been a huge development. And Catron has been Catron. He's always been pretty good at it, and he's just refined and gotten better at those things. But I think Drew and Nick together, that development and that combination of getting better there is that ability to take a check down and make it a dangerous play to win you a game at the end of that USC game. But I wanted to get your opinion on Nick developing as a receiver. What have you seen? You see more than any of us of that particular process.
Okay. I would say as a freshman when he came in, he was not quite, but pretty close to what I would call a body catcher. So in a body catcher, it's the hands, but they also then like use the body as a third hand to help secure the ball. What you're seeing now is Nick goes out hands in front like a wide receiver. That is the indication to anybody that watches. You know, so if you're somebody that doesn't have a sophisticated eye for the game, you're trying to learn more about the game. If you see a receiver with their hands out, their confidence level's huge because that's how you're supposed to catch it. His hands are out now when he catches the ball. He rarely now uses that body almost like that security blanket to bring it in, and it's made a big difference. So when you're confident, you're already in the process of making the catch, and then you're also in the process of making the cut because you're confident you're going to make the catch. You don't have to wait for it. That's what I see.
Yeah. And the body language, you mentioned the body language. Just when the ball came to him, when I initially watched him, like, he's stiff. Like, I don't want to say it's fear, but it was just an all-out concentration on the football. And now it just looks like he's been doing it for 3 years. And it's just, I've been really impressed with that because, honestly, that's a hard skill to develop. Some guys just don't ever really, you know, make that transition. And some of the things that these guys have done on campus, I've been really impressed, you know, the class of 22 specifically in my mind, of their development on campus has been really impressive, doing hard things and doing it while being on the field. And we all have to watch the development and the warts and all those things happen because a lot of those guys were pressed into service, you know, early as freshmen or as redshirt freshmen.
Let's face it, in high school, he really wasn't going to be called upon to catch the ball a lot. I mean, you know, they ran the ball as a run-centric team. So there are certain things that a running back transitioning from high school to college, there are two areas where they have to really become better at. Number one, they have to become better at catching the ball. And above all, they have to become blockers. And the blocking part, everybody else has been blocking for them. And because they're usually on run-centric teams, they're not having to pass protect. They're the ones that have the ball. Singleton and Allen have both become excellent at pass protection and blitz pickup, and they both are excellent in the pass game. And again, that's part of the development, but also the commitment by the young players themselves to understand that to be a complete player, you have to do it, and I have to give them a lot of credit for thinking that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now the offensive line part. What have you thought, run block, pass block, with this team to this point, too?
I have been impressed with Drew Shelton. Start with the good stuff. I've been impressed with Drew Shelton because this offseason he obviously was coming back from a surgery that he had to rehab from and then kind of get his football legs back underneath him. And I just specifically with offensive linemen, I think that's a real challenge because you've got to have your big boy pants on. You've got to have grown man strength to be a difference maker up front. And if you're not in the offseason getting bigger, faster, and stronger, and everybody else is, that is a natural sort of like you're behind the curve a little bit. And he was a little shaky to start the season, but he's really come on and played much better, I think, in the second half of the season where I kind of just set it and forget it. Like, unless there's an obvious pressure from his side of the offensive line, I generally am like, I know what I'm getting from Drew. I think there's still some areas where he can develop and be more consistent and be more of a difference maker, but he's definitely helping the offensive line in the run blocking game, you know, specifically. There's a couple of games where he kind of, maybe it's a mental lapse or something where he lets a guy off the front side and they are part of the tackle. But generally, I think he's been what they needed him to be as a guy where I think after playing through that injury last season, maybe we collectively had a less sure idea of what he was going to be after playing pretty well as a freshman. Anthony Donko, I again, just kind of go with the tackles. I've been really impressed with his ability to play with basically half a body. You know, like, you know, some of the injuries he sustained, all on from what I can tell, all on the left side of his body, and to go out there and play the way he did in the Ohio State game and to not give up pressures against a good defensive line. Whatever you think of that defensive line, whether you think they're overrated or underrated, they're definitely a very good defensive line. And, you know, pressure wasn't a problem for Penn State outside of one drive where they were able to get a couple up the middle on Drew and get some sacks. So Penn State was able to do what they wanted to and kind of shifted the game plan away from chipping on every single play because of the way Donko was playing, which was a surprise. You know, he didn't start that game. He had to come into that game and you know, played midway through and then finished the game. And he looks like just getting better and better each week. I don't know if he'll be 100% to the guy that was a dominant run blocker at the beginning of the year, but generally I think that's been a stabilizing force in the run game, getting it back towards where it was at the beginning of the year. And then the interior, I think, is the area where, if you're talking about the biggest improvement from last season, the scheme has helped them a lot, but they've improved significantly at stopping pressure up the middle on Aller, and that's allowed a lot of the plays he's made, it's easier to evade pressure that's coming from outside the tackle box, you know, tackle or outside, than it is to evade pressure directly in your face. So that's been a really good ecosystem for Drew Aller to operate in. It hasn't been, you know, I haven't seen a game where they have a full breakdown on the offensive line one way or the other. I think this game this weekend is going to be a good test for those guys on the interior, because especially, you know, when you're looking at Dawkins and Wormley, when the talent gets to that highest level, that's when the interior, I think, starts to struggle a little bit in opening up run holes. So this is a good Minnesota team, and I think this is a good test where if they pass this, that is definitely a massive step in the right direction if they can handle this ball game and control it up front.
Yeah. The usage of Warren, I feel like Wallace is helping him. How important would it be to have one of those other wide receivers, one of the other three, just get one more guy? What could one more guy mean in the pass game to go with Warren? Because Wallace, to me, is helping a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually was interested in this, so I looked at some of the advanced numbers on first read targets, or, you know, plays where you're involved in the first read. And I didn't want to just be Penn State specific. I wanted to look across, okay, good teams that they're compared to, other, you know, college football playoff teams. How many guys are actually getting real targets where they're in the number one read, whether they're the number one only target on a play, or they are part of that first read of, if the defender does this, then I throw to one of these two guys. And you're absolutely right. It's the top two. And as far as first read targets, it's much closer than people might think. They design a lot of plays to go to Tyler Warren, and there's no question about that. But in like a drop back progression situation, it's within, I think, seven passes between Trey Wallace and Tyler Warren.
Right.
But then there's a cliff, and it's all three of the other receivers we've seen this year vying for that third spot, and they've been kind of cycling through game to game. But it has been inconsistent, not only in the type of production because of the type of the receivers they are, but then the threat game to game in situations. You know, if you face a team like Ohio State, not to keep going back to this, but a team that's very physical through the route,
those are
the guys that were struggling the most, and they didn't present a threat in that game, then means you can just glom on to the other two. And then, you know, in certain situations against zones, I think you can see a lot more of Liam Clifford, who actually is the most consistently explosive of the group in terms of yards per catch and, you know, up the field explosiveness, where you have kind of a designed and tailored passing game around Amari Evans, where they're trying to find a way to get him involved. So get them involved. One of those guys has to do something to present that third target. And I guess the thing I would say is, at this point, I don't know that the way that they're trying to get those guys involved, I'm thinking specifically of like the short passing game and the end arounds to Amari Evans.
Right.
His struggle is through contact and tackle breaking and things like that. And getting him shallow depth of target, I understand wanting him to catch and run, but that is a big barrier where he has to break a tackle to make a big play in underneath coverage. And that, to me, seems like I would lean more into Liam Clifford personally, is I guess what I'm trying to say.
Evans, I think as time goes, if he can be more physical with DBs in the process of getting to the route of the ball, it would make a big difference.
Yeah.
I mean, without question.
I mean, he has the most talent of those three, and that's no disrespect to any of them. I mean, he runs, you know, in the 4.3s, and he is 6 feet tall. Like, he's the guy you're looking for in the offense to present that third threat of not just being a third receiver, but being a deep threat and having that electric speed. It's just been this very long road for him in becoming more physical, but also understanding how to be physical, not just the push-offs and things like that, but then playing through contact in a veteran savvy way has been the thing he's tried to learn the last couple of seasons.
Right. You look at defensively the play of Jalen Reed, the ability. You know, it's interesting. You'll see teams where the leading tackler is a safety, right? And you'll say, well, they're getting to the third level, except he plays so often in the box. What has his versatility meant, and what does it mean to a quarterback that he's got to find him every time?
I'd go a little bit further back and say that he is, because he's playing the position that KJ Winston was playing, and he's playing it to a comparable level. And that's really impressive, considering, first off, he wasn't playing that position to begin the year, you know, during camp or in the off season. He was playing the field safety, and he was playing, obviously, the lion position down in the slot near the box. Jalen's been around a long time, but he's never really been the leader in the boundary as far as, like, that guy who's over the box as the apex defender coming down and filling in the run. He has the ability to do it. We know that. They were trying to get him closer to the line of scrimmage, but just doing it from depth and the burst and the athleticism that KJ Winston had to do that versus the way that Jalen Reed does that with good athleticism, elite instincts and the conceptual understanding of how to do these things. I'm just so impressed with his versatility and his ability to just make it right. You know, the defense was not going to be in a good position after losing KJ Winston. And obviously everyone else had to adapt. They had to find those guys to replace him, you know, in that nickel position. But Jalen, he slid over seamlessly into that boundary position to, add in against the run and make those plays and be around the line of scrimmage so that when somebody misses a tackle or there's an open run play, you don't feel like it's going to go for 30. You go, okay, so somebody missed one. This one's over at 6. That is a huge benefit to the defense, considering they lost that very early in the season, and it was unclear whether they're going to get it back, and they have, and it's been a really impressive transition for him.
Yeah. Abdul Carter, we see the sack numbers. We see the tackle for loss numbers. What kind of all-around defensive end or defensive player has he become? Because Jack and I are looking at him, and we see him playing the run as well as anybody right now. And that's something a lot of people aren't talking about.
Yes, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I've been impressed and surprised that a guy in his first year playing edge rusher, and I know he's, you know, moonlighted as an edge rusher, you know, on passing downs, and they played a five-man front, so he was doing this a little bit last year. But to go full-time, play that position, and have as complete of a game as he has right now, and honestly, early in the season, was doing a lot of those things, is unbelievably impressive. Also, the number of snaps he's played more snaps than anyone else in the defensive end position. Obviously, denied Dennis Sutton getting hurt is a big part of that. But to gain weight in the offseason, change positions, play the same number of snaps that you did a linebacker, and, by the way, be one of the best all-around players on the team, most people don't do that. Even great athletes don't do all of that in one season. And he's playing at a style of play that is akin to the guys in the NFL that are elite run defenders from his position. J.J. Watt did this thing that has become kind of standard across the NFL, where against zones, instead of playing the outside and just waiting there and setting the edge, he would dip inside into the B gap, kind of going rogue against the system. But then, because he was such a great athlete, he would be in the middle of the play. So he was unblockable and ruining the scheme. And like a lot of really good edge rushers in the NFL do this from time to time. Abdul has been able to do that at this level and do it efficiently. There's only been a couple of times on film where he's done that and then, you know, West Virginia ran around him. The ability and the style of play that he's playing with is everything you want from the defensive end. I think this game this weekend is going to be a really great test, because he's feasted, as he should, on some of the weaker opponents over the last couple of weeks. This is going to be a good tackle with length and with movement skills to see how far he's come by using his hands and the things that he's really started to do over the last month or so. I want to see it against a comparable talent. Nobody has the same athleticism as Abdul, but if he has the ability to get home and get multiple tackles for loss this weekend, I mean, that signals he's made that transition into a bona fide superstar. on every level, not just the athleticism and the splash plays, but as a player overall.
I love talking breakdown with you. You're so good at it. T, thank you so much. Really, really, really appreciate it. Great stuff. I mean, when we're done with segments, people know more about the game. Thank you so much.
As always, Steve, glad to be here.
All right. This half hour brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Cammy McCormick. The FBI says it's investigating what it calls numerous bomb threats and swatting incidents targeting Trump administration nominees and appointees. Linda Kenyon has our top story.
The targets of the threats last night and this morning include former representative and former Trump pick for Attorney General Matt Gaetz. In addition, police in New York say Howard Lutnick, the pick for Commerce Secretary, was targeted, as was former Representative Lee Zeldin. He's the incoming president's choice to head the Environmental Protection Agency. Zeldin posted on X that a pipe bomb threat contained a pro-Palestinian-themed message.
Trump announced today he's nominating retired General Keith Kellogg as his Ukraine envoy. He'll be charged with trying to bring that war to an end. Kellogg served in the first Trump administration. It's no surprise that if you're traveling, you'll have lots of company. Many find patience is key.
So far, it's been good. It's not bad at all.
Chris Van Cleve is monitoring it all.
America is on the move to Thanksgiving dinner. Carol Moore and her son took the train from Washington, D.C. to New York.
I've made plans to go see a Broadway play and to also beat the traffic.
At the airports, the TSA expects to screen 2.9 million flyers today, and the FAA is opening additional express lanes in the sky, usually reserved for the military, along the East and Gulf coasts to help keep pace with the surge in holiday flights.
The exchange of fire continued up until the last moment, but the ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah appears to be holding. CBS correspondent Natalie Brand reports.
Cars stream back into bombarded neighborhoods throughout Lebanon Wednesday. This resident said going back home is the nicest feeling. Fighting along Lebanon's border with northern Israel displaced more than a million people. This Israeli resident said, "This is what we've been waiting for. Now we can get back to work."
Shoppers have spent more than $77 billion online in just the first 24 days of the holiday season. Vivek Pandia of Adobe Analytics says that's up 9% from this time last year.
We've typically seen consumers shift into cheaper goods through the year, but because consumers at this time are buying goods for family and friends, we tend to see them more willing to spend in higher price tier goods, luxury goods.
Consumers have spent the most on electronics. Consumer price increases grew at a quick pace last month, and the latest sign that inflation's steady decline over the past 2 years has stalled. On Wall Street, the Dow is down 105 points. This is CBS News.
Sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Protect your family, your phone, and your furry friends with life, electronic device, and pet health insurance.
Hey, so right now may be the perfect time for you to rethink how you pay for health care. And here's why. This time of year is decision time for a lot of people, but it's also when you can join MediShare and save even more than usual. For many families, joining MediShare means saving about $500 a month, which is a game changer for a lot of people, obviously. But what's more, MediShare members like it a lot. Their satisfaction rate is 98%. Imagine that. And MediShare is a proven thing, too, for over 30 years. It's a Christian community of hundreds of thousands of people now. And here's the thing. If you join before November 30th and you mention the promo code SHARE, they'll waive your application fee. So you save even more right off the bat. I'll give you the number here in a second, but just call and you'll get a price within 2 minutes. And again, the deadline is November 30th, so call now and you'll save even more. Here's the number. 877-64-BIBLE. That's 877-64-BIBLE. 877-64-BIBLE.